Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Discussions with Delia Farquharson. Delia is a licensed social worker and experienced life coach, dedicated to helping you achieve your goals and become your better self. She specializes in helping others identify the connections between your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Welcome, Delia.
Not just about a particular incident. They have deep roots in many communities of color who have a sense that our laws are not always being enforced uniformly or fairly. That may not be true everywhere, and it's certainly not true in the vast majority of law enforcement officials, but that's an impression that folks have, and it's not just made up. It's rooted in realities that have existed in this country for a long time. Now, as I said last night, there are productive ways of responding and expressing those frustrations, and there are destructive ways of responding. Burning buildings, torching cars, destroying property, putting people at risk, that's destructive, and there's no excuse for it. Those are criminal acts. People should be prosecuted if they engage in criminal acts. But what we also saw, although it didn't get as much attention in the media, was people gathering in overwhelmingly peaceful protests here in Chicago and New York, Los Angeles, other cities. We've seen young people who are organizing and people beginning to have real conversations about how do we change the situation so that there's more trust between law enforcement and some of these communities. And those are necessary conversations to have.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Discussions with Delia. I'm your host, Delia Farquharson. And that was our President Barack Obama, responding to the grand jury verdict in Ferguson. And our discussion this evening is on that topic. And it's, it's a sober discussion. It's a sober topic, and I hope that we can look at this in a way, take a mental health perspective on it, because that's what this show is about. So, but before we get into our topic this evening, let me say hello and good evening to my guest co-host, my awesome husband, Raymond. Hi, Raymond.
Hello, Delia.
So I'm framing this issue in Ferguson, Missouri, regarding the unfortunate and really sad death of Michael Brown as one of the result of complex trauma in our community, in our communities, rather. The fact is that, and I put it in the tease that I sent out, but Dr. Christine Courteau, I believe is how her name is pronounced, has done a lot of study on complex trauma. And she says, for the men and women afflicted with complex trauma, it is important to recognize and understand the ways that they've been impacted by their experiences. It is essential for them to understand that their symptoms come from somewhere so that they can have compassion for themselves. And what I believe we're seeing for the majority of folks who are responding, and I know that there are agitators among them, that there are people paid to incite violence and riot in these communities. But for the people who are honestly responding and painfully responding to what has occurred, that this is a traumatic experience. One of the criteria for diagnosing trauma, one of the questions asked is, have you ever seen a dead body outside of a funeral? And the fact is that Michael Brown's body laid in the streets for all to see for 4.5 hours. That's a traumatic experience. And so to see how many young people have been unarmed and killed, gunned down by police, and the kind of fear that I believe that that causes or triggers within the community, within young black men especially, but also within young black women and older black women and men, because those are the mothers and fathers and the sisters and brothers. And so people are terrified that this could happen to them. They've seen it happen so many times. And so this could happen to me too. And so I believe that the experience, what we see happening, is this hopelessness and this sadness and this sense of powerlessness that is caused by incidents like this. And then when it's bad enough that Michael Brown is killed, but then on top of that, nobody is prosecuted. So it seems like nobody is responsible for the death of another innocent young man who's unarmed, who's killed for no apparent reason. And it's kind of like, well, what's the point? And so how do we reassure our community? And I think the president alluded to that. How do we kind of try to rebuild, restore trust? How do we help our community to manage the kind of stress that this triggers?
I guess each time these situations occur, you're thinking, what are the lessons? We could think back to many of them that we're aware of in the news and think of how many that we don't know of. You know, that where young black men are killed in, you know, less than straightforward, questionable situations, and the police officers, even if they are prosecuted, they're still found innocent, or, you know, it could get watered down. And so the idea of saying, what lesson did we learn from the last one, and how can we, you know, how can we not repeat this? I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm not sure.
And I don't know, Raymond, that, you know, that it's enough to say what lesson did we learn. I think it's about how do we respond. Yeah, how do we respond? How does the community respond? Because, truthfully, this cannot be allowed to continue. And so what do we do in response to this? And how do we, in the meantime, reassure our boys and our girls that they are safe? Or how do we help them to keep themselves safe? How do we provide outlets for them to release emotionally regarding this? You know, to talk about it in a safe way and to express the fears and the worries that they have.
And that's difficult, because if you have no control over it, then it even becomes even more frustrating. Because then you become a victim of something you have no control over, and that's also an issue.
Right.
You don't trust the law enforcement, you don't trust the laws, and the laws are proven not to protect everyone equally. So even without anything happening, going out there, you know you're at a disadvantage. And I think the president, some of what he was talking about, is that part of what I think should be, the conversation should continue, the protests should continue in terms of looking for changes in terms of how the laws are written, and number two, how the laws themselves are administered, because it can't be, and it is proven over and over again, that it's not a level playing field. It is not administered the same way, regardless of the citizen that is involved. And I think something else needs to happen, where those that administer the law need some figure, some organ, something.
But I think
needs to enforce
it's, but it's
that.
People, though. I think it's people, and I think that's what we are seeing. Granted, the response that we're seeing in Ferguson is destructive. right? It's burning
yeah.
the buildings and burning the businesses and
yeah.
burning the cars.
And
it's
that takes away from the mission.
It does. But there are, because we have so many solidarity protests in other parts of the country that
yeah.
are not you
yeah.
know, disintegrating into, you know,
chaos.
Into chaos,
mm-hmm.
that we, you know, we I think it's really important that we take, that everybody takes a stand on this.
Yeah.
Because it is taking all our humanity away. Because, you know, if a segment of our community is not safe, then we're all not safe. Because, you know, it's just a matter of time before that shifts too. So how do we understand it? How do we discuss it? How do we channel the energy, especially the anxious energy, the worry that is generated in our young boys and girls? How do we channel that in a productive way? And how do we allow them the space and the time to talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. And I think this is where law enforcement and those who are, it's not just, I don't think it's just law enforcement. I think the legal system, the attorney generals of our country, the whoever, the local enforcers of the law, the legal community, the federal and state legal attorneys, they in every city, in every town, need to really make it a mission to be as transparent and as engaging with the community that the communities that they serve, regardless of whether they're black, brown, yellow, or green.
But you know what, Raymond? It's not just regardless of whether they're black, brown, because these things are happening in communities of color.
I understand, but the communities of color is also a part of, is a subset of a broader community. And therefore, those who are Caucasian need to know that it's happening as well.
But they do, because...
No. Here's what I'm saying. What is happening in terms of the engagement that we are saying? We are engaging those who have been marginalized and disenfranchised, and these are the type of conversations we're going to have. As I listened to a gentleman earlier on, I don't remember his name, on the program on TV, and he was saying, listen, as a white father, I don't have the talk. As black fathers, you're supposed to, you're expected to, you're supposed to have these talks with you. And until those who are white understand what that means, by having a son or having a child, you need to have that. Until they can understand it and realize it, it won't matter as much. So they need to know that these conversations are happening. Yes, it's those
because
of color are the ones who become victims of it, because these communities of color are not in isolation. They don't just have them situated out somewhere.
I know that.
So those who live within their communities need to be included. Otherwise, they're not. It's just going to be a police or a law enforcement along with having a conversation with those of color.
Okay, but
in isolation.
But I think though that it's you know, and I agree with you that we need to have, you know, whether it's public service announcements or like a public education, you know, like a push to publicly educate everyone about the reality that so many people face.
Yeah.
But I think that it has to be, and you know, you hear me say it all the time, because I think I'm a little bit of a policy junkie, but it has to be a policy perspective. Like, for example, the law, the Michael Brown law, that all police officers will be required to wear a body camera. So we can say, let's educate everybody and tell them that, you know, for black boys, they got to be told, when you get pulled over by the police, you got to spread your fingers, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to, you know, you just got to comply.
Yeah.
Otherwise, your life may be in danger.
That's a fact.
Right? But that's one way of doing it, because it just takes one trigger happy. Look, we saw the thing down in Florida where this man got pulled over by the police. Police told him to, he was in a gas station, told him to give him his license and registration. He reaches
shot
into
him.
His car for his license and registration, and the police
shot
officer
him. Shot
him. So what I'm saying is we can tell that to people, and if there was no camera and that man had told his story, they would have said, you must have done something else wrong.
All right, and they would have found something in his car.
So what I'm saying is it has to go beyond that. It has to go almost to a legal policy forefront where we're putting things in to make people feel safe.
Right.
We're putting things in and recognize that the system has been unfair to men and boys of color particularly, and that these safeguards are being put in place for just these reasons. So the body cam, so we know. But it doesn't stop because we saw, in Brooklyn, where the police officer beat this young man for no reason. Again, it was caught on camera. But if it wasn't caught on camera, you'd have heard a different story.
Right.
And we've seen this time and time again. So I think part of it, and it has to go into the education and the preparation for law enforcement officers, where we got to start humanizing people of color, because clearly they don't consider, you know, the racism that exists and the disparity that exists with regarding other people, you know, people who are different than themselves, is clear.
I agree. And I think, you know, the idea that folks can be prosecuted for killing innocent people, the folks that, you know, that when charges are brought against a police officer or a law enforcement person, you know, what are the chances that they're being prosecuted? You doubt that, so therefore they're never prosecuted, or very few times, and even when they do, for the most part, they get off. That's discouraging.
It is.
You know.
And that's why I was saying before that's what you're seeing overflowing mostly in Ferguson, is that people are saying, wait a second, so, you know, we saw him get killed, he was not armed, and now you're saying that the folks who saw what they saw lied, and not only did they lie, but we're saying that we won't even examine it in an independent way. We won't even present it to a jury of peers to say, let's look at this and see if wrongdoing was conducted, right? And I think that's where the pain is.
For me, honestly, listen. I wasn't on the street. I wasn't in the store. None of us was there when the incident occurred. And therefore, speaking to it, you can speak of what you think or what you hoped or so on. But what I am most frustrated with is listening to the district attorney administer a different brand of the law, interpreting how the system or how the process should work, which is not consistent with how it has worked all other times, makes no sense to me.
And that's a policy systemic issue.
But no, I mean, policy is something written. Practice is, do you do what you say and do you say what you do?
That's what I'm saying. But
and
if we had a policy that says...
This should be a problem. This, honestly, I don't know what the law says, but this grand jury's decision should somehow be overturned, because he, as the DA, administered whatever ingredients to the law, which is inconsistent with, as he said, all the other times and all the other ways it has ever been admitted. It has to be one law being administered regardless of whoever is killed.
You know,
and that's my biggest problem with it.
Okay, but the thing about it is, Raymond, and we go back to the response of the community, and what we're seeing as symptoms of this pain, symptoms of this trauma, because time and time again we hear of these things happening, and time again we see that no one is held accountable. And so for this idea to be in our collective psyche that black lives don't matter, that's painful.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are so many things. It just sounds like, you know, the tidbits that come out and so on, and even the interview of the police officer that he goes on television and talk about. There's so many things. I mean, I'm not a law student or not that I'm an attorney, but it just sounds as if the things that the grand jury was presented with or how they were asked to interpret it, and you kind of just kind of left them on their own to figure things out. To tell me that for the last however many years that they've been using a grand jury process, this is the way that they've used it, it's crazy.
Right.
It's absolutely crazy.
And I'm trying to redirect you back to the idea that,
mm-hmm.
okay, how do
I'm
we...
I'm stuck there. I
know you are. I know you are.
It is wrong.
A lot of people
it
are
is
stuck
wrong.
There.
It
and
is wrong.
And that's what's going on. A lot of people are stuck at that point where it's wrong, but how do we deal with it? Because, yes, it is wrong. How can you channel what you're feeling to effect change?
Okay.
Right? And that's how I want to move the conversation. How can we channel what we're feeling? How can we channel this idea of injustice?
Mm-hmm.
To move change, to cause change in the system.
Then I think the rules that govern the state of Missouri is different from the rules of a lot of simple letters of law from state to state. So therefore, in Missouri and in Ferguson, what does the law say, and where can the folks and the citizens of not just Ferguson, but the citizens who support that cause can affect change in a community specific to Ferguson, Missouri? Because the laws are being specific, and this is what happens, and therefore, what laws that we would like to see and advocate to be either, this should be overturned because there was a miscarriage of justice because it was not administered fairly, and the law should be just and fair. If a white police officer shoots a black gentleman, then okay, fine, you tell your story, the man is dead, he can't tell his, right? So, but the law that is translating what happens have to be consistent, and therefore it has to have a recourse. The legal community needs to force and enforce the law or figure out how some way for this to be represented in a court of law to change the way these things are done and make sure they're administered fairly and justly.
But what, you know, Raymond, you know, the thing about it is, and this is what I go back to, that it's about systemic changes. It really is about systemic changes, and that's why the demonstrations, the solidarity demonstrations, I call them, that's happening throughout the country are important.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important because it's not just about Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
Because the 29 people that have been killed since 2012
mm-hmm.
by security or police officers it happen in different places. So we cannot just focus on Ferguson. It is unfortunate that the latest one, and the latest one is not even in Ferguson, right? but it's unfortunate that this occurred. But what we know is that it has to be done at a federal level, that this has to be something that, because we cannot rely on states to do this. We cannot rely on states to say, you know, how people of color are going to be treated. This has to be something that is just more widely administered, and it's something that unites us all. So therefore, we need to be really focused in how it's going to be addressed, in, you know, what do we see as remedy for what happens when an unarmed person of color is killed, and what kind of prosecution and how their evidence is handled, and who is, you know, we need to kind of look at those things, because the fact is that because he's the DA, he got to make the decisions, and those decisions can't be overturned.
Understood.
Right? And so we cannot leave it at that level. But what I want us to really focus on is, on an emotional level, is you know, how to deal with that kind of trauma, how to deal with that kind of pain, how to deal with the anger and the frustration and the hopelessness and the sadness that people feel.
I think, for me personally, I think the best way is
to be involved in something that you are seeing, where you see the change occurring and the impact over time, where you believe that the cause that you're supporting, you're not just walking up and down and say, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, but you are part of a process, a part of a mission that is working on, you know, enacting change. No,
Our politics is local. Right. So it's about getting involved at a local level.
You're voting. You are
writing to your and you're writing to your Congress folks or your senators.
You're being good mentors and good examples to the young people of your community. You're reaching out to them, making sure that they understand that, you know, they can come to you, and it's not just when something happens you're there, but other than that you're nowhere to be found. Being involved in your community, and as you said, local politics and voting and who's on your school board and who your commissioner of police is and who the local judges are. I think those things, the involvement and the advocacy and making sure that simple policies, it doesn't have to necessarily...
Because you know what, Raymond, that's a really good point. Because when you think about it, in Ferguson, they only had like 3 black police officers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a town that's, I think, 70% black, but the school board is primarily white.
But that's
politics, right?
Yeah,
that's politics.
That was here.
But it's not here now.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, but those things are representative of the imbalance in power that exists in a community like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why getting involved, and that's why, you know, educating yourself about, you know, what's going on is really important.
Right.
And voting,
right.
You know, seeing who, you know, who's representing you and what the laws are,
right.
Is really important.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, again, I think it's unfortunate. It really is, and it really breaks my heart that you know, another young person had to lose his life in this way, and you know, and that it continues to be perpetuated. But it's really important for us to have the conversation until such change occurs.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important that we ensure that our young boys and young men know how to interact safely with police and the authorities. It's really important that we educate them on that, because we can pretend, but the fact is they need those skills.
Absolutely.
And it's really unfortunate that we have to explain these deaths and we have to see these riots in the community. But I think it's a symptom of the pain that exists. And so, for one, I think in those communities we need to be having discussions, public forums, discussions about what people are feeling, what they're thinking, and how they're processing this, so that at least they can be heard, the feelings can be validated, and people can find a way to channel what they're feeling into more productive avenues.
I agree.
So, you know, I mean, again, my heart goes out for all these young people that have been killed, and it's both men and women. I mean, I think the name of Amadou Diallo will forever be symbolic with police, you know, unjust force by police, so, you know, but, you know, so we shouldn't be so many years later be coming to
19.
So, you know, it's about having conversations, getting involved, and caring about each other, you know, really caring about each other, because I think that's what makes a difference, becoming, you know, seeing ourselves as human beings
and
brothers keepers. So I'm going to say all the best for Thanksgiving Day tomorrow and until the week after next, because we won't be here next week, but you can always enjoy other episodes on our archives. So until then,
bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Discussions with Delia. Check us out on the web at discussionswithdelia.com. And like our Facebook page, Discussions with Delia. Please follow me on Twitter at Discussion Delia. Thank you again for listening. Peace and bliss.